it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to THN on the Q. My name is Will. His name is Jamie. And behind the scenes is Connor Somerville, who's telling us that we have to wrap up in 30 minutes. Good luck. It's another week in the Q, Jamie. And there's a lot to cover here. But the first question I want to ask you, and by the way, Connor, I am not evil. I am just stating facts. And I am not letting the man bring me down. But you know who is bringing people down? The team in Drummondville, Quebec. So, yes. Jamie, you've seen a lot of ups and downs in your time in the queue. In St. John, it's either, you know, Memorial Cup champion or missed the playoffs in recent years, it seems. You ever seen many fans kicking around the old TD station with paper bags on their head?
I've never seen that in person, but if I did, I would probably laugh. I think that's kind of funny. It's definitely a statement. Fashion-wise and also towards the team.
Definitely. It's putting yourself out there at the very least. There may or may not be people that we know, by the way, in Cape Breton that have done this before. Because it seems like everything has happened in Cape Breton at least once, you know, between trainers getting thrown out and, you know, whatever else we've talked about on this podcast over the last few months. It's happened in Cape Breton at least once. Paper bags happen there as well. You'll have to talk to somebody who may or may not have been a former guest of our show to get more details on that. But the latest spot for the paper bags is in Drummondville. The Volts are 2-8 in their last 10. Now, they did win in a shootout versus Bathurst on Sunday to snap a 6-game losing streak. But people are not happy, and it has been a very rocky season in central Quebec. Jamie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it definitely feels like the coaching change they made hasn't quite had the big impact they had hoped. And, you know, they've the paper bag guy, I can't really blame them. I looked at their schedule. They've only won 2 games in all of 2023. They didn't have the greatest of Decembers either. So it's been a bad couple months for the Volts. And like we talked about when they made their coaching change, you look at their roster and it's, you know, it's not like they're a team full of rookies and 17-year-olds. Like, they've got a pretty decent roster. And to put it bluntly, they've got some guys, right? Like, they're not a team full of no names. And for whatever reason, it's just not clicking there this year. And I think it's definitely disappointing given that they're in a division with Shawinigan, who's obviously rebuilding. And then Victoriaville, who I think is still surprising all of us, but is probably a team that you could pick up some wins against compared to Sherbrooke. So it's been a really disappointing year for the Volts.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you had in Blainville, who, you know, they ended up, you know, also a team that had an unexpectedly poor start to the season. And they just ended up selling. You know, they traded the assets that they had that were the most marketable, and they went that direction. You know, it seems like with Drummondville, though, they just weren't at that point in the cycle. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to trade Tyler Peddle at this point? You know, you're a team on the rise, and you're one of the best 17-year-olds in the league. You're not going to let it go of a guy like that. You're not going to let go of a guy like Riley Mercer in net. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have no choice but to stay the course. But be curious to see what that course looks like come the off season, because, you know, it seems like there's a lot of lights on the dashboard right now. Be curious to see how things wind down, because really at this point, you know, what else can you do? You're past the trade period. What are you going to do? Fire Eric Bélanger after what has been 25 games, maybe, I'm guessing. Like, it's an untenable situation and unfortunate, but you know what? Maybe the paper bags might just be what the doctor ordered.
It's the turning point. It's the turning
point. It could be. And by the way, postscript to the other paper bag gang out on the Cape. After that happened, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the Eagles like won 7 in a row. So you never know. This guy might be the dark guy of Drummondville by the time it's all over. We're going to wait and see. But there's another team up in Quebec as well that's certainly trending in the opposite direction. They're even younger than the Volts. And they are getting a lot of production from some of those young guys. We're talking about the Chicoutimi Saguenay. They're 6-4 in the last 10. And the guy who keeps showing up in the highlight reels, Jamie, is a guy who I think it's a very safe bet to say that even now, three quarters of the way through his rookie season, he's going to be a star in this league, and that's Maxime Messé.
Yep, always impressive when you look at the key rookie scoring and the leaders, the 16-year-old, because you're always going to have, you know, those 17, 18-year-olds tossed in there. So really, really impressive season for the third overall pick in summer draft. 51 points in 48 games, averaging over a point per game. That's just excellent numbers on a team that's not, you know, exceptional. So really, really great start for him and for Chicoutimi as well. Four picks in the first round last summer. So you know that they're, I think, 6 or 7 in the first two rounds. So really, really young team, really upcoming team who I think it's safe to say is maybe a little bit ahead of schedule. And also a team, it's funny when I look at the Eastern Conference, there's all these teams who I thought, you know, their roster isn't great, but I think that maybe playing in a bad conference is going to lead them to good seasons. And a lot of the teams I thought would be able to do that haven't done that. But Chicoutimi mm-hmm. has surprised me and kind of been one of those teams.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you get a guy up there in Yannick Jean who, first of all, has been there forever. You know, he's really made his mark on that franchise over really, you know, this is, I think, his third building cycle. If you're counting things in that manner with the Sags, and he just knows how to get the most out of virtually any roster that's handed to him. Yeah. But these rosters, you know, the development side, where the development side of things plays such a crucial factor, he always seems to really excel, and he'll squeeze every bit of talent out of that group that he can. You know, and you know, you talk about Maxime Messé leading the league at 16. It just reminded me of, you know, there is a rule in place in the queue for people who don't know about it. The Rookie of the Year award can now only go, or you can only be considered a rookie if you're 18 years in your 18-year-old season or younger. And the guy who you can thank for that is Ladislav Nagy, who his year in Halifax scored, I think it was 71 goals or something like that. He was a 19-year-old, but anybody could have been a rookie. So he, like, it, basically he was Michael Bunting before Michael Bunting existed. You know, he pulled the old Billy Madison on everybody and just walked everybody, won the Rookie of the Year. And meanwhile, he technically only had one year of eligibility left anyway. So interesting little caveat there. You mentioning 16-year-old Massa, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And also credit to the Sags. You know, they when you've been around for 50 seasons like them, you can do a few things with your celebrations. And they actually had an alumni game last week. And one guy in particular who stood out to me had nothing to do with anything on the ice. And it was great to see good old Richard Martell back yes. Behind the bench, and saw a couple of photos on social media. He still had that same look in his eyes, the intensity, as if he was coaching like in the Quebec League finals or something like that. Of course, he's now a member of parliament for the Saguenay region, and one of the nicer guys I've ever interviewed. He's just a tremendous individual, very, very well spoken, and great to see them pull something like that. You know, the teams down here in the Maritimes keep rolling the mileage behind them, you can't help but wonder if we're going to see things like that happen down here soon. You know, Halifax, they're close to 30 years. So is Moncton, even St. John. You know, it's, you know, we're inching closer to two decades. Hard as that is to believe, it'd be great to see something like that happen in a few other locales around the league that can pull it off.
Yeah, and the Sea Dogs have done that a couple times, actually, organized by the late David Kelly. They did that at least, I believe, twice, I want to say. Really cool events, and, you know, the players don't have to come back. Like, they're doing this on their own time, and it just shows what an impact those junior teams had on their lives when they're going to take time, usually out of their off season, to come down and spend some time back where their careers all began.
Yeah, and a great shout out there to DK, fellow Red Sox fan. We used to go back and forth on that quite a bit. Also go back and forth on who had the best cannolis in the north end of Boston as well. He was a Mike's pastry guy. I'm a modern pastry guy, but you know what? All in good fun, and he's still missed every single day, both in St. John and throughout the league. week. So now, thanks for bringing up that name, because it brings back a lot of memories there, Jamie. Speaking of memories, here's something that neither one of us would remember, including me, who it seems like I'm the one that shows up here every week with my onion tied around my belt, taking the ferry to Shelbyville and telling you about things that happened like forever ago.
What? Great, but, modern reference. Yeah.
Great modern reference. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. Great. I'll just be going to have my nap now. You can take over for the rest of the show here. Let's talk a little bit about a team or a city that hasn't hosted a Q franchise in over 30 years. And the talk is, at least from one corner, that it might come back. The league might come back, and that is Trois-Rivières. There is a local investor who has expressed interest in purchasing the Blainville property and Armada, moving that team to Trois-Rivières. There's a brand new arena in Trois-Rivières, and the setup is certainly there. But there's also something else there, and that's an ECHL franchise, the Lions. It's a slight little wrinkle in the plan, let's call it. Lions are in their second season of operation, still have 3 years remaining on the lease. So this is something that really can't work right now. But, back in the day, the Trois-Rivières, first they're known as the Duke, and which I believe is some sort of owl creature. If you go on the Q website, I think that's what the logo was. So. And also the Traveur, as they were better known as. They won a few league titles back in the day, but they have not had a franchise since 1992. Be interesting to see how this all plays out, Jamie. Once that lease comes available, will the fans want to lose a higher caliber of hockey? Will it be feasible for the ECHL to stay? And would they embrace a junior team? A lot of questions there.
Yeah, this is a fascinating one. And the second Trois-Rivières started building this arena, you kind of knew that this was going to be a topic. And it kind of feels like Trois-Rivières to the Q is going to be what Quebec City is in the NHL. You have this this building that's ready. You have a market that probably wants it. But there's just other factors that come into play here. And the Lions are obviously one of them. But I think the bigger one is just Shawinigan. And for those who don't know, Shawinigan is very close to Trois-Rivières. And a lot of the junior teams, when they go to Shawinigan, actually stay in Trois-Rivières. And I know most of the media stayed there during the draft a few years ago. So very close together. And Steve Turcotte from Les Nouvellistes, who's very dialed into the Shawinigan scene, had a really good article kind of debunking a lot of these speculations and rumors. But interesting little tidbit from that, it's from the sounds of it, Shawinigan doesn't have the power to simply veto this decision anymore, but it does sound like Shawinigan would have the support of the owners to stop this move if it gets that far. So it definitely sounds like if Shawinigan doesn't want this team in Trois-Rivières, it's not going to happen unless something happens. And I would assume that Shawinigan must have some sort of data on their tickets to say that this move would be bad. Otherwise, it seems like a natural rivalry, which would probably be good for the Q. But I don't know. What are your thoughts here, Will?
Well, I mean, the two cities coexisted in the league for, what was it, 25 years almost, from the inception of the league until 1992. So, I mean, it's not that it hasn't been done before. It's not that it couldn't be done. Of course, the league's a lot different than it was back then. You know, you're talking about a time when the league was solely in Quebec. There's like 10 teams. Attendance, there was no place, like I'd say probably if I was to guess, back in that era, like the late 80s, early 90s, Quebec City was Gatineau was probably one of the bigger markets. Nobody had a big arena. So a lot has changed. It's a much bigger business than what it used to. So I can understand from that standpoint, cutting into, losing, 750,000 fans a game in 2023 is a lot different than losing that number in 1992. It's not ideal at any time, but I will say this much. I would love to see it happen for, if no other reason, this league has had a terrible time in the Montreal area, keeping franchises there, and trying to foster some sort of history in the area. And that's not a knock against the league. It's just Montreal's a big city.
Yeah.
And they kind of have a team that overshadows, like, the universe.
Laval Rocket.
Yes, the Laval Rocket. And I was going to say the Montreal Estrangers of the Junior A League.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Laval Rocket, close second. I'll give you that. It's just so hard to overcome that, which is why they've gone to the suburbs. They've gone to Blainville. They went to Verdun instead of going right to downtown Montreal with the old Montreal Junior. But I think, and it's not to, you know, confirm that the league doesn't work in Montreal, but it's more to put another franchise in the league that will foster a natural rivalry. Who's the rival of the Blainville Brabrand Armada? Nobody, really. They're a solid franchise. Let's be honest. This isn't Drummondville, Victoriaville. This isn't, you know, this isn't, you know, Quebec Rimouski or Quebec Chicoutimi or Moncton Halifax or pick your, you know, Val-d'Or, Noranda. The list goes on. You can name every other team in this league has one key rival. I feel you could safely say. Maybe not Sherbrooke, but I think one's developing with Gatineau, especially this year, and perhaps Quebec. But Blainville really doesn't have that. They're kind of antiseptic out in the suburbs. Do I want to see them move strictly because you know they quote unquote should move? No, but if it means a stronger rivalry and a little more passion in the league, and by the way, if the right people are in place to foster a bit of a rivalry, it's not going to hurt ticket sales. It's probably only going to improve them. Mm-hmm. I think with the right mentality, this could work, and it could work quite well. And I've been sort of looking at it myself for, you know, 25, 30 years. Why isn't there a team in Trois-Rivières? It only makes sense. And there's not many places that the league could move or expand to anymore anyway. Most of the markets are filled up. This is the logical step, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. Like, the eventually a team is just going to – they need to move for whatever reason. And Trois-Rivières is there. And, you know, where else can the league really go at this point? There's just not a lot of natural places for them to go. I would love to know – I would love to know the league's thoughts on this because – at Trois-Rivières, I mean, that would be pretty, that's a pretty big market for the Q to move into. And this will be a shock to a lot of people. I have been to this new arena. And this arena would instantly.
No, I don't believe you.
But this arena would instantly, you are fake news. Right? This arena instantly becomes one of the best rinks in the league. It's top notch. And I would just swing this into another conversation we're going to have on this program. I would go as far as to say that Trois-Rivières becomes a contender to host a Memorial Cup with this building in that city. So, if I'm the Q, I really want to try and get in this market anyway I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And like I say, you know, I'd like to reiterate, this isn't at the expense of the Blainville Brabrand Armada. Obviously that's the story right now, but if anybody's been looking at some of the attendance figures, and I know that everything that's happened to that team this year has not contributed to attendance. Let's make that perfectly clear. Yeah. But I mean, if things don't improve, invariably change has to be made. But you know, however it happens, a team in Trois-Rivières only makes sense for this league. And I think, you know, as much as Schumannigan would have the right to veto it, I think they would have just as much right to embrace it. And I agree, potential Memorial Cup host. And while we're on that topic, the OHL, of course, is hosting in 2024. It's their first time hosting in what seems like forever. But in fact, it's only since 2017. Although, you think about it, Jamie, by the time they get around to the 2024 tournament, that's 7 years. You know, between COVID and the 100th anniversary and, you know, you name it, it happened. Mm-hmm. Coming back to the O, four teams have submitted applications to host: Kingston Frontenacs, Niagara Ice Dogs, Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, and Saginaw Spirit. So that led us to wonder, Q is hosting in 2025. And when you look across the landscape of the league, Jamie, who do you see as the most viable hosts for that tournament when it swings around here in a couple years' time.
Well, this, you know, I hadn't really thought about this until you brought it up, but this is a really fascinating.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Of course, always do. This is a fascinating one because when I first thought about this, well, there's no way it's coming back to the Maritimes again. Okay. Right. Well, how about Gatineau? They have a new building. Well, they're probably not going to have a good team by then. Well, mm-hmm. What about Quebec City? Well, they just hosted it recently. So, you know, who does that have left to host? You know, I think you're kind of looking at the smaller markets at this point. I know there's been some talk about Rimouski, who hosted it back in 2009. Maybe they'll have the team ready by then. Shawinigan again, which would be awesome. I don't know if that's going to happen. I know there's tons of drama. We could have a whole podcast series on the 2012 Memorial Cup. And then you're looking at smaller, even smaller rinks there. Drummondville's getting some significant arena upgrades eventually. As Connor just mentioned, Sherbrooke. Problem with Sherbrooke is their rink, I think, is a little bit too small. It's a small rink. Would be a great city to have it in, though.
I thought that held close to $5,000. Am I incorrect?
Yeah, I think it's around 35, close to four.
Really? Is that around low?
There? Yeah, maybe 45. Okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah,
funny because, I mean, for the size of the city of Sherbrooke,
yep.
The fact that they renovated it for the Phoenix to move in, that's a little bit surprising. Yep. But I mean, you know, one of us on this podcast has probably been in that building, so I think I will have to defer to that person.
So I think, yeah, 36-46.
36-46, yeah. Thanks to Connor Somerville doing all the research, yes. Which also proves that he also listens to this as it's recording, okay, I was going to say he deserves a badge of honor, but instead Jamie's just going to take shots at him. I approve of both reactions.
So yeah, this is a tough call. Like I do wonder about maybe they would be open to Moncton. I know the Maritimes again. I don't know if the league would really like that, but at the same time, you've only got so many options here,
right? And that's just it. You know, Quebec's not really going to be at. Sorry, if I was talking about any other team in the league, probably I would say Quebec's not really going to be at that point in their cycle, but Quebec is one of those teams that could probably find a way to get to that point in their cycle. Maybe that's Patrick Waugh's last ride and he makes it the high point of the cycle again, with a quick two year turnaround. Who knows? Another one too. And we hadn't discussed this before going to air, but it's funny. I'm a little slow to connect the dots, as anybody would attest to, I'm sure. By the way, that'll be a great one for the mailbag. You know, anybody who knows me personally, you can feel free to write in and tell people how I'm a little slow to grasp concepts of things. It won't make it to air. But anyway, what about Chicoutimi-Saguenay?
Oh,
that
yeah.
team will be That's an interesting great.
One. Yep.
That one, they will be right at peak or very close to it. And the Centre Georges Vezina, I do believe, and I'll rely on Jamie's memory and Connor's research to confirm this, I believe it's close to 5,000 seats in that rink. And it would be a loud rink, to be sure, if they hosted.
That would be incredible. Yeah, it would be incredible. And I can tell you, though, Will, like they need some fairly significant upgrades to their rink if they want to do that. And I know they've had trouble just with their ice over the years. So having that, you know, play in late May, early June is definitely an issue. And then, of course, the big question, will the CHL want to have the Memorial Cup on an Olympic ice sheet? That would be very interesting.
Ooh, good question. Good question. You know what? It's funny. That rink underwent some substantial modifications and the upgrades. I'd say it was probably 10 years ago now or close to it. And I thought for sure the Olympic ice was going to come out. They were going to shrink it down to NHL size, maybe put a couple more rows of seats in there somewhere. Yeah. It never happened. And, you know, and the fact that the ice is an issue. I mean, the rink was built in 1949. It makes you wonder how much of the substructure in that building was actually tended to. Or overhauled? Does it become a situation like the Halifax Mooseheads did before they hosted in 2019, where they actually ripped up the slab underneath the ice surface slab, the concrete slab, and redid all the mechanical works and the refrigerant piping and all that. And I know this is getting super exciting, by the way, to everybody.
I love this. This is excellent.
I'm talking about refrigerant piping now at a 70-year-old arena. Maybe they turn around and do something major like that. It'll probably, it would theoretically cost the Sagnia a chunk of their early home schedule. They would have to condense that schedule. Yeah. But at the end of the day, there's ways around it for sure. Yeah. If it's a viable thing on the part of the city, but it's certainly a viable thing in the part of the team. They would have a strong team.
And Scudamy 100% could host the Memorial Cup. Beautiful city, definitely large enough. Would be awesome to see it up there.
Definitely. Be interesting to see. We'll find out in about a year's time who's submitted from the queue and kind of take it from there. Generally, that gets announced in April in normal circumstances. So we'll keep an eye on the O this year and the queue next. In the meantime, O and that this year and queue next. Yeah, that sounds about right. Told you, I have difficulty connecting the dots. Do you have difficulty listening to this podcast? I don't blame you because I just inherited a new tongue. You want to talk about that? Do you have any questions for us? Do you have any comments? Or do you want us to talk about anything and everything Q related? Send us a message on Twitter. We will pick it out of the mailbag and give it a read on the air. I'm at Will McWriter, MacWriter. Jamie's at @Station_Nation. We'd love to hear from you. Keep those letters coming in. Let's talk about the NHL team profile for the week. And I'm kind of waiting on this one since the beginning of the season because there's some names. You're going to want to watch your feet with all these name drops that are coming up. We're going to chat about the Pittsburgh Penguins. And if there's one team in the NHL, Jamie, that can probably thank its existence to players from the QMJHL over the course of its history, this is the one. There was a guy in the 80s and there was a guy in the early 2000s, both of whom came at just the right time and are probably the main reason why this team isn't playing in like Oklahoma City or something. Mm-hmm. Let's chat a little bit about the Pens. There's only one drafted player in the queue right now. That's Isaac Bellavone. He's a guy that, you know, he's just a steadying force. Like he's been around. This is his fifth year in the league. He was drafted in 2021 by the Pens in round five. But you know what? He is part of a very, very deep D core in Gatineau right now. And by all accounts, you know, still getting the same results and playing his steady game and helping that team reach the upper echelon of the standings.
Yeah, having a great season. I looked at Elite Prospects before the show, on pace for 50 points in 55 games. So really, really good season. And then, you know, poised for a long playoff run too. And I feel like he's going to be a guy that's going to, you know, play like those legendary minutes that we see a lot of veteran defensemen do in the Q playoffs.
Yeah, he seems like they play different games. I think Isaac Bellavone has always been a little more offensively driven, but you know, I think when Shawinigan was at the Memorial Cup last summer, you know, maybe a guy like either Isaac Menard or Angus Booth, who played, you know, fairly big minutes, Booth especially, who was kind of unheralded because he was injured part of the season, and even, you know, turn around on the Sea Dogs side, you know, maybe he's their Vincent Savigny as well. The veteran presence who can pop in a goal or come up with key assist at key time, can be out there in all situations and backing up, you know, two first rate guys in Tristan Luno and Noah Warren, not Morgan Warren, who by the way played for the Moncton Wildcats about 25 years ago. Get that onion tied back to my belt once again. AHL number of guys and. At least a couple of guys here, I think, Jamie, that is safe to say you're going to see them perhaps on a regular basis in the NHL. And one of them has already made his debut this year.
Yeah, and it's interesting kind of looking at this list, you know, Ravis Anson, Samuel Poulin, Nathan Legere, Samuel Hood, and then defenseman Xavier Ouellette. A lot of those forwards, they kind of have the same type of mold. They're kind of those responsible two-way guys. Not explosive offensively, but you know, interesting that they're kind of the same type of player. So obviously Pittsburgh kind of has a type Then there's obviously Poulin, who's a bit more of an elite offensive guy who I think definitely has a shot at sticking around in the NHL for a long time.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And he is the guy who's already made his debut. Mm-hmm. I think he has one assist in three games. In a brief call-up with the Pens this year, Nathan Lagare, just a pure sniper, 40-goal guy in the queue, knew how to shoot the puck. Really, one of the better releases in recent times in the league. And shout-out to Xavier Ouellette. We talked about the Montreal Junior earlier on in this broadcast. There's a Montreal Junior alumni for you right there. Played at the venerable Verdun Auditorium. Still my favorite queue bar that I've ever been to. You know, I mean, Jamie, you've been to about, you know, 15 more than I have. So you might have one that you favor a little bit more, but it can't beat a night at the old auditorium with two man benches and the garbled sound system and phone booths for broadcast booths. It's great.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, it's a time and a half. Four guys in the ECHL right now with the Wheeling Nailers. And Wheeling Nailers, they have been around forever. Like, that's been Pittsburgh's team for literally decades. You don't see an affiliate stick with an AHL team for as long as Wheeling has with Pittsburgh. And it's the ECHL, too. So good for them. Felix Perre, Samuel Tremblay, former Blainville Gatineau winger, Brooklyn Komakov, just wrapped up his junior career last year with the Moncton Wildcats. Of course, Cedric DiRusio, who had the absolute monster pandemic season with the Charlottetown Islanders as a 20-year-old with 42 goals, and I believe it was something like 40 games or something like that, and trudging along at a decent clip right now in the E as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great to see.
Yeah. Then we get to the NHL. Three guys. We'll start with P.O. Joseph, defenseman from Charlottetown and Drummondville, who had a very solid career. You know, now he's a regular fixture in the NHL, you know, high sticking his brother, Matthew, when he plays against Ottawa. Of course, they high stick each other on the same play. It's one of those fun family moments, I think. Then you've got a guy.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, you know. If you can't high stick your brother, who can you high stick? Chris Letang, who I think by the time he retires, somebody should be writing a book about that guy.
Yeah. Doctor should be writing a book about him.
He'll be in a medical journal for sure. Yeah. We know that. But you think about it, you know, here's a guy who rookie season in the NHL, his best friend and former D partner with Val d'Or, Luc Bourdon, killed tragically in a motorcycle accident, goes on to win the cup. That happened during the Stanley Cup final, of course. Goes on to win the cup the following year. He's now survived two strokes. Unfortunately, lost his father rather suddenly earlier this season. Like, he's a guy that you just want the best for, because it seems like for every positive that's happened in his career or in his life, there's been something that has completely thrown, it would throw anybody for a loop. And it's just, it's a fascinating story, not to sound somewhat morbid, but for sure, there's a moral there. There's a tale worth telling. And, you know, I really hope personally he wants to tell it someday, because it could be inspiring to a lot of people, on top of the fact that he's one heck of a defenseman and has been for a decade and a half in the NHL.
Yeah.
Then there's another guy. So before I go much further, it would probably surprise nobody to hear from me that the greatest player that I've seen play in the queue was Sidney Crosby. He's had some decent competition there from Rimouski alone, in guys like LeCavalier and Richards and that whole crew. And then later on, in, you know, Nathan MacKinnon with the Mooseheads and guys like that, top tier guys. But I'm curious to find out from you, Jamie, and not to put you on the spot, but that's what I'm going to do. Who from your time watching the queue would you say is the best player you've seen?
That's a good one. Probably MacKinnon. I think, you know, Huberto in his draft year was elite. You know, I always go back to someone who a lot of people may not even remember, Stanislav Galiev, who played for St. John, who was an import player. One of the most dominant players I've seen play in a game, at times. And then, you know, Radulov as well. But I actually never saw Crosby play, so I'll take your word for it, Will.
Yeah, yeah, you'll have to. Yeah, I'm probably making this up, Jamie. But, you know, he wasn't bad. Yes. He has made a couple of plays at the old Moncton Coliseum that I have not seen an NHLer make, including Sidney Crosby, the NHLer, at top speed. A special couple of years in the year in the league for sure when Sid was around. And really, he's, you know, one of, if there's three flag bearers in the queue. There's, of course, the late Guy Lafleur, there's Mario, and there's Sid. And, you know, when you're at that level and your number's retired league-wide, what else can you say? So that'll bring us to our 2023 draft prospect of the week. And we are going a little older this year, this week, Jamie. We're going to talk about Justin Gill from Sherbrooke Phoenix. He's been passed over. He was passed over in the 2021 NHL draft, passed over in 2022. Probably a strong possibility he's not going to be passed over the third time around.
Yeah, having a great season with Sherbrooke. Just turned 20, January 27th, so happy birthday to him. I think, you know, it certainly a strong chance he'll get drafted. I'd say a definite chance he'll either get drafted or signed as a free agent by a team, I would assume. So definitely has a shot at turning pro. On pace for 96 points this season if he plays the full season, so almost 100 points. Plays with that electric Sherbrooke team. It's kind of moved down a little bit into the lineup now that they've made some acquisitions, but still on a good pace. Currently sixth in Q scoring. Very good for undrafted 19-year-old, so you know he's going to be getting some attention. You know, and really a guy who is perhaps a late bloomer, I would say. Only had 46 points, played in all 68 games last year, only had 46 points. So definitely a guy who is finding a scoring touch as he gets older. And maybe a guy, since we mentioned this every show, maybe a guy who is a bit of a late bloomer because of the COVID issues.
Yeah, a strong possibility. You know, you almost want to put him in that same basket as a guy like Maxime Pellerin in Victoriaville, who was, you know, highly touted at the time he was drafted and really put it together this year after a few years in which the points weren't quite coming. So be curious to see what happens to him in the offseason. He was invited to Vancouver Canucks training camp in 2022. But the Canucks, of course, were too busy, you know, making fun of Bruce Boudreau and, you know, whatever else they do in Vancouver.
Priorities,
exactly. So they kind of let poor Justin go by the wayside, and it would be interesting to see where he shows up this coming summer, because you can bet, whether it's by the draft or by free agency, as you mentioned, Jamie, he is going to be in a pro camp somewhere. Yep. And that'll about do it for us for this week. Jamie, this is one stacked week for games this week. What are you looking forward to, just to close things out here?
Yeah, I'm looking at right at Gatineau's schedule. Huge, huge game tomorrow night, or we're taping this on Tuesday night. So Wednesday night, Halifax visiting Gatineau. Huge game there, obviously. And then a really quick turnaround for Gatineau, who's going to play their annual series against the Ottawa 67s, which is always noteworthy, but especially noteworthy this year, given that Ottawa sits first overall in the OHL. Gatineau near the top of the queue. This is potentially a Memorial Cup matchup. So really, really cool that we see this in the regular season. And if the CHL is listening to this, please give us more of these every year, please.
That will be a topic on a future episode too. Trust me, especially after this week, when these two teams get together and we hope put on a show for the fans in Ottawa and in Gatineau and in both of those respective leagues as well. We are going to have something to say about it. You can absolutely bet on that. So we will wait and see how that all transpires, and we will wait and see what other news comes down the pipe. If you have anything that you want to share with us, questions, comments, anything of that nature, remember to send it to us. We will read it on the air. Follow us on Twitter and get those comments to us. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. This has been another edition of THN on the Cube, brought to you by BetMGM. We'll see you next week.